Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. You know, this is a practical show done by a practical guy, and that is me. This week, I have Dr. John Adeen that I'm going to be interviewing here for this episode, and I'm going to kind of leave it as a surprise as to what we're going to talk about. You can probably guess. It's not going to be primarily about his organization, Doctors Responsible for Gun Ownership, although I am going to give him a chance to talk a little bit about that. But we've got some things to say about the horrible, horrific mass murder and radical Islamic terrorist attack in Orlando. And I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that. Not a lot, because, you know, there's so much talk about it anyway and so much news and things coming out. But I do want you to hear a couple things that I think are going on here that doesn't really get talked about much whenever we have a mass killing like this. I've always said that, well, not always, but for the last few months or last several months, I like to end my show by saying evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. And I got that from Paul Carlson at the Safety Solutions Academy podcast and the Gun Nation podcast. It was last September when Ben Branham and I were in Ohio teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. Paul showed up and spent a little bit of time with us there, and we were talking. We did an interview after the class. You can listen to that if you go back to listen to some of my older episodes. And Paul said he had heard that from somewhere, I think from a Baptist preacher or something like that. So I decided to borrow that because it's so true, is it not? All right, I'll get into that in just a little while. You know, folks, next week I am going to dedicate next week's episode to listener feedback. I've got some really good emails that have come to me lately, and I want to share them with you. I'm not going to read them word for word, but I'm going to paraphrase them and tell you, you know, a little bit about. I'm going to summarize what the emailer is saying, and then I got some good responses. So that's primarily going to be the show next week. If you've got a question or comment about the Handgun World Podcast or anything I say, you can send me a voicemail. I would love that because I'll put you on the show and then I'll answer your voicemail. 210-646-1727 is the phone number. You can leave me a 3-minute voicemail. 210-646-1727. And of course, if you want to email me, the best way is bob@handgunworld.com. And of course, the website, handgunworld.com, which I refer to quite a bit. Somebody once asked me, why is my show called Handgun World Podcast? Back in 2009, I was looking to buy a new shotgun. And this is how this came about. I got the idea to do a podcast because I heard some other people doing podcasts. And I figured, hey, you know what? I've got this newfound, well, to me it was new. It was for 4 years I had been concealed carrying and competition shooting. And I thought, well, I can talk about firearms as well. I got some things that I want to say. So I was looking for a new shotgun, and I was on the website shotgunworld.com, and it just kind of hit me. Hey, you know what? I'm reading shotgunworld.com. Why don't I call my show Handgun World? And so that's what I did. I set up the website handgunworld.com, and I decided to call it the Handgun World Podcast. So back in the early day, I called it the Handgun World Show. I don't know why I actually called it that, but, you know, I changed it a few years ago to Handgun World Podcast just because that's really what it is. It's a podcast. I mean, you know, show kind of says to me that there might be other things involved in a show, but this is just an everyday guy like me. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I didn't start off being a firearms trainer. I am just a regular guy. I'm a husband. I'm a dad. I'm a salesperson of 30 years, just trying to make a living every day, just like some of you, to support my family. But I seriously take my Second Amendment rights to heart, and every day I carry a gun. Now, why do I do that? Not just because I can't carry a cop. Funny tagline, I know, but there are lots of reasons. And so since we've had this horrific, horrible Islamic radical terrorist attack. And I'm calling it that because that's what it is. In Orlando, Florida. My hearts and prayers do go out to the victims and the victims' families. It's hard for me to talk about right now because I don't like to hear about these things. I don't like to see these things, and it upsets me. It upsets me greatly. Folks, there is evil. And if you've never believed that there are evil forces out there, doesn't this maybe change your mind? How could you not? That's what this is. Pure evil. Now, I'm not going to rant here. I'm going to be very short and concise because I want to get to the interview with Dr. John Adine. I think there are really only two things that can be done to stop this from happening or to minimize the occurrences. There's only two ways to stop it. Not necessarily in this order, but here's what I think are the two solutions. First, we need to take the fight to them in a really bad way. You know, a lot of people say, well, we shouldn't go to war or we shouldn't attack anybody unless the very security of the United States is being threatened. And I agree with that. The United States of America has made too many mistakes fighting wars against entities or people that were not directly threatening the United States of America. May I submit to you that this is a threat? This is a direct threat. Threat. Not only that, they came over here and killed us. This guy, Omar Mateen, affiliated with radicals, Islamic terrorist radicals, killed 49 people and injured 53 others. Is that not a threat? Is that not a direct threat, a direct attack? And he did it here in the United States. So did the two people in San Bernardino. So did the terrorists at the Boston Marathon. And obviously so did the terrorists on 9/11. If there was ever a time where we were totally justified in going to war, I would say this is it. These people have not stopped declaring war on us, ladies and gentlemen. They declared war on us a long time ago, and they're carrying out their attacks. Now, you know, this is not some country that has declared war on us, and this is not a convention. We all know this is not a conventional war, you know, where we go sending our ground troops and our navy and our air troops into a certain country and try to defeat them. This is far different. We all know that. But we can do this. We need to go stomp out the root here. I guess I'm at a loss of words here because I'm getting too excited. I need to calm down. We need to go to the root of the problem and we need to wipe it out. They are at war with us. What is it going to take for people to realize that? You know, I got a lot of libertarian friends that listen to this podcast. To my libertarian friends, you always say, no unnecessary wars, only unless the very security of the United States is being threatened. Is this not the time? What is it going to take to convince anybody who's anti-war that this is the time that we need to go to war again to take these people out? That's all I'm going to say about that. If you're a listener to Student of the Gun Radio, which I highly recommend that you listen to that podcast as well, Student of the Gun Radio, several months ago, they put out a show called Sermon on War. and it was a sermon by a preacher talking about the justification of war. And you know, many of you know I'm a Christian. And the more I read the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, there were times where God encouraged and helped the people that loved him to go to war. At times it was necessary. I'm not saying that God always sanctions war. That's not the thing I'm trying to tell you. But he also didn't forbid it at times. You should listen to that. Sermon on War. Do a search on that. Student of the Gun Radio, Sermon on War. I'll link to it in the show notes to make it a little easier. So you can go to handgunworld.com. You can find this episode, which I believe is episode number 371. And in the show notes, you can find the link to the Sermon on War. Very good. You should listen to it. In fact, listen to it and let me know what you think. I would love to hear. Okay, the second, and probably the most important, well, not the most important, but one that you can have immediate results is, ladies and gentlemen, you got to protect yourself. You've got to protect yourself. If there here we go again. It was in a gun-free zone, the Orlando shooting. And John and I are going to talk about that in the interview coming up. If there would have been just one person, just one, in that nightclub that had a gun and was able to start shooting back at that guy, I will bet you that the killing would not have been as bad and maybe even stopped early. The whole incident may have been stopped very early, or it wouldn't have been as bad. I mean, hey, even one person getting killed unnecessarily is bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an advocate of violence on this show. I never have. That's not my faith. That's not my beliefs. And I don't believe in advocating violence. I do believe in advocating self-defense when it's justified. If you're in a nightclub having a good time and someone comes in, starts shooting up the club, that's justified, folks. That's justified self-defense, is it not? If there had been one person with a gun, the whole thing probably would have turned out differently. That terrorist attack was started by a bad guy with guns. And that terrorist attack was ended by good guys with guns. I'll say that one more time. The Orlando terrorist attack was started by a bad guy with guns, and it was ended by good guys with guns. How hard is that for people to see? I can't figure out why there still are so many Americans that just, they don't get that. They don't get that. Every single time, is it not true? Every single time, it is stopped by good guys with guns. Sometimes these terrorists kill themselves, but guess when they kill themselves? Oftentimes, it's when the cops show up with guns. When the good guys have guns and they carry them, these things don't happen as often. Or when they do happen, they're not as bad. But it was a gun-free zone. Oh, great. A victim disarmament zone. Those zones work so well, don't they? They just really improve our safety, don't they? I'm being sarcastic, aren't I? Yeah, you bet. So those, I believe, those are the, in my opinion, this is just Bob Main's opinion on the Handgun World podcast. There are only two things that are going to reduce these terrorist attacks: taking the fight to them where they live, at their source, the organizers and the inspiration of these terrorist attacks, and wiping them out. That's number one. And number two, Americans arming themselves to protect themselves. That's it. Those are the only two. If somebody can come up with a really good third thing that could be done, I would love to hear it. Again, you can send me a voicemail, 210-646-1727. You can write me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast, handgunworldpodcast. If you want to follow my personal page, I'm Bob Main on Facebook. But I don't like to put a whole lot of gun stuff on there. That's my personal page. I like to put my gun stuff on Handgun World Podcast Facebook page. And I'm Handgun World on Twitter. John Adine's coming up shortly as I cruise in the Handgun World mobile studio. Headed up to Austin, Texas for a business appointment. I want to thank the many people who support this show financially by making their purchases through Amazon. It's been a great month so far. Thank you very much. If you want to support the Handgun World Podcast financially, and, you know, there are costs that, you ask any podcaster, there are costs that we incur on a regular basis. They're not big, but they're there to put these podcasts out for you to listen to, and you get to listen to them for free. Some of these podcasts that you listen to have a whole lot of sponsors, and they spend a lot of time each episode talking about sponsors. I only have one, concealmentsolutions.com. I'll get to them in just a minute. But I try to keep this relatively commercial free. So make your purchases. Make your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store, handgunworld.com. Click the Amazon store and do that. Just do those two steps right there before you make every Amazon purchase, and you'll be helping me out. Amazon, through the affiliate program, will be paying me. And it's all secure and it's all private. I don't see your name or anything like that. All I see are the orders that are placed and shipped. Handgunworld.com, Amazon store. Click that link each time you make an Amazon purchase. And Ben Branham and I have a really good Shooters Club video membership. 55 very good instructional videos. I've had some new listeners email me recently. To you new listeners, you might want to consider becoming a member of our Shooters Club, because you will learn a lot about concealed carry and just shooting in general. You can do it for only $8 a month. Go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com and check it out. $8 a month or $75 a year. It's a private site for members only. Good stuff on there. And Concealment Solutions, makers of fine, fine holsters. Right now I'm using a Cobra outside the waistband holster, which I think is the most concealable outside waistband holster on the market. I'm carrying my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield 9mm in a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster. I think it's terrific. Check them out, concealmentsolutions.com. And if you use the coupon code HANDGUNWORLD, you get 10% off on anything except his belts. 10% off your order using the coupon code HANDGUNWORLD when you check out. And by the way, today I'm also using a horizontal mag carrier for my extra Smith & Wesson Shield mag. But the horizontal mag carrier, I love mag holders for my my Glocks and all my double stack guns. But for my single stack, my smaller magazines, I like using Dale Fricke horizontal mag carriers. I think they're awesome. I can't seem to get a mag holder mag carrier for a Smith & Wesson Shield or for a Glock 43 or a Kar PM9. So about 4 or 5 months ago, I tried Dale Fricke's, and I love them. I got like four of them. They're not a sponsor, but I just love their product and I use them. So that's it's great for carrying an extra magazine for smaller guns. Check it out. That's Dale, Fricke. Fricke. All right, folks, here comes John Adine. And we talk about a lot of cool stuff. Stay tuned. Well, my special guest for this episode, back again, Dr. John Dean. John, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about this awful tragedy that happened. You were one of the first people I thought about because I understand that you're a real big fan of gun-free zones, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a fan of gun-free zones like a hole in the head.
Victim disarmament zones, as Alan Gottlieb says.
Absolutely. And just spree shooters, you know, that's their target. That's what they look for.
Well, before we get into this, because I know you're angry about it, I'm angry about it. In case somebody's listening to you for the first time, tell them who you are, what you do, who you write for, who you represent, all that good stuff.
Okay. I am a pediatric orthopedic surgeon in San Antonio, Texas. I practice actively. I've been here for about 18 years. About 3 years ago, I started getting politically active in the gun rights arena. And so at this point, I'm the membership director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. That's drgo.us is our website. And it's an organization of healthcare professionals, not just physicians, but all health type of healthcare professionals who are there to promote the Second Amendment. We have a really good website, and we have a blog that comes out a couple times a week. We tend to go against the AMA and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the kind of the public health side of the Bloomberg the machine. Whenever they put something out, we publish articles that debunk the stuff that they're putting out.
Well, I'm glad you do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we like our friend John Lott. You know, he's the go-to guy, really, when it comes to cutting stuff down. But we actually have our own people who do some stuff as well, and we have some good writers. We have a pretty good cadre. Our cadre has grown over the last year. And we have our two main writers are Tim Wheeler and Robert Young. But now we have a bunch of other guys, and some of the guys have been in the organization for a long time. There's a guy named Miguel Farias, who is a neurosurgeon, who's, I think, come to the end of his career. So he's really, you know, liking to do a lot of writing. We have guys in Washington State and other folks in California, Iowa, I mean, all over. So, and I even write every once in a while. I'll throw an article up there when it's something that suits me. And we also have commentary pretty much every day on our Facebook page too. So the stuff that comes out daily, we usually make mention of, and we'll highlight and comment on.
Good. And in case people didn't catch it, Dr. Adine's right here in San Antonio, where I am. John's been to several of our classes that Ben Branham and I have taught. John also took the Tom Givens class with me over in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And, John, you've been everywhere. I think you've been to Mag 40 once or twice as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been to Mag 40. In fact, I'm going to do a Mag 80 in July in Washington at the Firearms Academy of Seattle. I've done, you know, Rob Pincus, and I've done Grant Cunningham's revolver class, and I've been to Front Sight. I've done, you know, pistol, shotgun, rifle there. We did that John Payne rifle class not too long ago.
Not too long ago, we did the John Payne Suarez International rifle class. You did that with me too.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, I like to train. I think it's important to be able to operate your tools efficiently. And, you know, we need to be prepared. My concern, of course, is, you know, hospitals in Texas are gun-free zones. And so every time I walk into work, I have to disarm and look at all the sitting ducks, all my colleagues, the nurses, the doctors, technicians, patients, families, you know, they're all sitting ducks. And, you know, hospitals are a soft target. We have, you know, crazy people, and we have terrorists. And, you know, obviously this terrorist attack brings it to me very close to home. You know, a gun-free zone and a soft target with one guy, look at the damage that guy was able to do. You know, around 50 people killed and more than 50 people wounded. Could you see that happening in a hospital with multiple guys who in a coordinated attack, what they could do?
Sure.
In a large, you know, metropolitan hospital. And it doesn't have to be in San Antonio. It could be anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
You know that the borders have been infiltrated, from the southern border, and also walking right in the front door, invited by our esteemed president, who says, yeah, come on, bring all those wonderful people from Syria here. Well, we can't really vet them or screen them, but we're going to bring them anyway, and you're going to have to take them, too bad. And let's spread them around the country and make sure that they're everywhere so that they can,
so they can wreak as much havoc as they
exactly. want.
And I'm not labeling all of them as terrorists, but, you know, still the deal is it only takes one terrorist among them. That's
right.
It only takes one.
Yeah, even if it's 10%, that's 10% too many.
It's 10% too many, yeah. Well, you mentioned to me offline before we started this interview, John, that you're angry. And I'm angry, too, about what happened in Orlando. But tell us, why are you upset about it? What makes you angry about this?
Well, gun-free zones, in my eyes, are immoral. We know that the shooters pick, or I wouldn't say shooter, but the murderers, they're not just shooters. You and I are shooters. These guys are murderers. They select out gun-free zones because they know that the people there, the victims that are disarmed, are, you know, ripe for the picking. It's a soft target. It's a gun-free zone. Nobody can defend themselves. And, you know, it just angers me that our legislators have designed the laws with this loophole. If you hear about the gun show loophole, well, here's the gun-free zone loophole. Okay, so even in a state like Florida, where 14% of the population has a concealed handgun license, all these people were disarmed. Now, if there were 300 people in there, that means that close to 50 people should have had a firearm, if you just look at the statistics. But because of that law, every one of those people were disarmed. And the one person who was armed is identified very easily by his uniform. He was the first to get to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course,
and you know,
go ahead.
Well, you know, John, the thing is, you say based on the statistics, there should have been 50 people armed. Even if there was one person in there with a gun, I think the whole thing would have turned out a lot differently, don't you?
Yeah, as long as that person had an opportunity to employ his firearm, you know. You would have to take advantage of cover, concealment, or whatever, and the fact that the guy has a blind spot, come up behind him and basically, you know, put a bullet in the back of his head to stop the carnage. Unfortunately, you know, chance may have it that guy was, you know, could have been out in front and would have not been able to get to cover or concealment and end up getting taken out in the first flurry of bullets, let's say. Then it doesn't do us any good. But say four or five people in that club were armed, one of them probably would have had an opportunity to stop the carnage.
I think that even if there was one person or two people, you know, there is, hey, it's a better opportunity to stop it than nobody being armed.
Absolutely. I mean, a chance is better than no chance.
Right. And, okay, so this brings up kind of a sticky point I wanted to get your opinion on. I mean, I'm angry that it was a gun-free zone. Okay, in Florida, if I'm not mistaken, just as it is here in Texas, you can't carry in an establishment serving alcohol for the most part.
Yeah, greater than 50% of their income is right. Very much like our law in Texas. That's exactly right. Now, there are other states that have laws that say you can go into a bar with your gun, but you can't drink.
But you can't drink, yes.
Well, you know what? That makes much more sense. Therefore, it's not a gun-free zone, and you know, and again, it's individual responsibility versus the state telling you what you can and can't do.
So basically, a law that is written by idiot politicians, and some of these same idiot politicians want to take our guns away, the same law that says that people can't carry in an establishment where there's drinking going on just cost the lives of 49 innocent people.
That's correct. That's absolutely
and,
correct.
And it wounded 53 others and might cost, hopefully not, some of their lives.
Yeah, I think there are going to be, apparently some of these people were gravely wounded and they're just hanging on. So hopefully they'll make a recovery. But, you know, who knows? Being in the medical profession, we can save them a lot of times. But, you know, if somebody's got a brain shot, they may be alive, but, you know, what's their quality of life? And so in any event, most of these people, their quality of life is going to be significantly affected.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm angry about, John, about this. And it's here's the thing. I'm not – okay, I'm angry like you. I'm angry that it's a gun-free zone, and I'm angry that the politicians have deemed it gun-free zone because of the laws and everything. But what I'm most angry about is the absolute refusal of a large portion of our society to recognize this as pure evil.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, our society has been educated for over the last 40 years to be multicultural and to not judge, and you know, all the usual left wing pablum. We're all equal, and some of us are more equal, and that we shouldn't. We shouldn't fight back. If somebody attacks you and you fight back, you both get punished. You know, this is the interesting thing. What is the weight of 100 people? How much
what is
on
the
average?
Weight of 100 people?
How much
on the average?
15,000 pounds, right?
Well, if you figure the average person, what? If you
say 150 pounds is the average person. Okay.
Probably more than that, but even if it's 150, that's 1,500 pounds.
It's 15,000 pounds.
15,000 pounds, yeah.
How could that guy resist that mass of humanity? So if everybody in that place, instead of running, turned around and went after the guy.
15,000 pounds of people coming in.
That's right. He would have been, they could have stopped him. So part of this is also a mindset, is that, we're sheep, or everybody's sheep. Nobody wants to take responsibility. You know, Anthony Calandro in New York, you know who he is?
No.
Gun for Hire, radio. He owns a training school and a very nice range in northern New Jersey. He coined the phrase, rush the nut.
Yeah, okay, I've heard that.
Yeah. So if you have a shooter, rather than everybody running away, everybody should rush the guy. Now maybe a few people will get shot, but you'll be able to, disarm the guy. And actually, if you look at the statistics on how the active shooting things ended, a lot of them were ended by unarmed people that were at the scene.
Yeah, but in this case, well, you're right. We can think back to September 11th. We can think back to the one airplane that was taken down,
right?
because they rushed those terrorists on the plane.
That's right. They were able to stop the event in its tracks. Now, unfortunately, those people sacrificed their lives, but look at the number of lives they saved by doing
that. Well, and you're right. Now, in this case in Orlando, think about that. Okay, so let's say there's 15,000 pounds of humanity coming at this guy. Now, let's add to that one or two of those people actually has a gun.
Yeah.
And once several other people tackle this guy or subdue him or manage to get his weapon from him or distract him or whatever, if the one or two other people that has a gun, they can take him out.
Yep. Exactly. Or, we're not. They don't necessarily need to have a gun. If you put 10 people on top of that guy, he's done. There's nothing he can do unless he's got an explosive vest. That's another thing. These guys, who knows what the next step is going to be. They get firearms, but, a lot of the terrorists, they like explosives. So, look at all the stuff that happened in, Paris. Yeah, there's a combination of firearms and explosives, and so we all have to be on our guard, and we all have to be vigilant to see what's going on around us. And I think that's really important, amongst our listeners. We have a lot of people who are of that mindset where they, keep an eye on what's going on, but most people are completely, zone white, in condition white. They're just, in their electronics, walking around and not paying attention, and the stuff happens without them ever even seeing it coming.
Or they're in a nightclub drinking and dancing and having a good time and not paying attention. They're in condition white and they're not paying attention to their surroundings.
Exactly.
Now, John, you mentioned something earlier that I kind of want to bring, if I can get rid of this brain fart that just happened to me now. Oh, man, I hate it when that happens. Okay, we'll get back to that. I know what it was. You said maybe the guy might be wearing a bomb vest.
Right.
Okay. I want to say something about that. This is why I want to put out an appeal to all of our brothers and sisters who are shooters, who listen to this podcast, who train. I'm going to say something kind of controversial here. This is why you have to learn to shoot in other places than just the body. This is why you got to learn how to make headshots. And a lot of people go, oh, Bob, headshots. Oh, what are you talking about? Yes, headshots. This is why you got to learn this. If you're in this kind of a situation and you don't know if this person's got a bomb vest or whatever, you pop him a few times in the head and it's game over. Would you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, there's a doctor named James Williams who teaches a class called Tactical Anatomy. And he teaches people where to shoot from different directions based on the anatomy. So if you're trying to hit a brainstem shot, you know where to shoot. You know your point of aim from the side, from the back, from the front, et cetera. So he talks about, you know, vital organs and brain shots and pelvic shots. So he's a worthwhile guy to look up his stuff. It's called Tactical Anatomy. And he does teach courses around the country. I've talked to him on the phone actually a few times. He's a pretty good guy. But I think that's worthwhile looking at some of his information.
I'm going to look that up and see if I can put that in the show notes
yeah.
for people. So you're angry about this. I'm angry about this because this is something that could have easily been prevented in a lot of different ways. And, you know, one of the things, I get back to what I was saying earlier, this is pure evil. And until this country realizes, until our government and our people realize that this kind of evil exists, and I don't care what religion they're from, whoever does something like this is an evil person. I don't care if they're it doesn't matter what religion that they practice or even what walk of life that they come from. This is evil. And unless you're willing to admit that, unless you're willing to admit that this is the world that we now live in, like it or not, maybe you don't like the fact that these kinds of people exist, but they do exist. And people are going to have to basically, you know, arm themselves. They're going to have to take their safety into their own hands, because if they don't, this kind of stuff's going to continue to happen.
Right, and you have to remember that the government is neither are they obligated to or able to protect you.
No.
When there is a mass attack scenario or terrorism or whatever, the government is going to be busy with their own agenda. They're going to have their own things that they're going to have to protect. You are just a mere ant. They don't really care about you.
No, they don't.
They're gonna look after themselves. They're gonna look after their infrastructure. They don't care if your house gets blown up or your family gets killed or even your hospital, you know, gets blown up or people get killed there. In fact, some of them would take advantage of that to say, look, we need even more gun control. Just like what happened, you know, from last week's attack. You know, the first thing they do is they trot out more gun control, and now they're putting pressure in the Senate, you know, with the filibuster that they did the other day. You know, so now there's probably going to be some bills come up to a vote that never should see the light of day. But, you know, the Republicans, you know, with their usual weak-spined response are going to go along with it. So we need to contact our representatives and say, no, we're not giving back any more of our rights. We've already had too many taken away. Stop with this stuff. Let's talk about the no-fly list here for a second.
Okay.
The no-fly list. Okay. How do you get put on the no-fly list?
I don't know.
Somebody puts you on it. So some government bureaucrat puts you on it. How do you get off? Nobody knows how you get off of it.
Supposedly there's a due process method of getting off of it, but nobody really understands clearly how that works.
So how do they get away with taking away your rights Okay, because they're talking about doing, you can't buy a gun if you're on the terrorist watch list or no-fly list. So you have a constitutional right stripped from you without any due process. What about, you know, the part about being able to face your accuser and to, you know, put up a defense and have representation?
Right.
That's due process. None of this crap is due process. This is stripping the rights of, you know, of citizens based on a whim. Okay, and what's to stop whatever government's in power to decide, I don't like those people. They're my enemies. Let's you know, make it so that they can't buy guns, whether there's a reason to or not. Just like exactly. The IRS was targeting political enemies of the president. How hard is it for the, you know, the ATF or the whatever to pick a bureaucracy to put somebody on a watch list or and a no buy list, you know, just like what they're doing to the veterans and with Social Security recipients. There's no due process there either, where they're being stripped of their ability to purchase firearms. Why is it if my grandfather decides that he wants my brother or say my father decides he wants my brother to take care of his finances while he's traveling, why should my father have his rights stripped? Even though he's not mentally defective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are the kind of things that they're trying to pull off. And none of this stuff is constitutional. It's completely unconstitutional.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I agree with 100% of everything you said here about this no-fly list thing. We should avoid that. I agree with you 100%. Here's something else I'm angry about that really nobody's talking about, okay? Regarding this whole Orlando incident. You know, everybody's saying, oh, he bought the guns legally, and he shouldn't have been able to buy the guns legally, and blah, 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 blah. Does anybody think for a minute that if he couldn't buy guns legally, does anybody think that that would stop him? He's going to go get the guns illegally and do what he wants to do.
Sure. I mean, there's a black market for firearms.
Yeah.
I mean, if this guy is an ISIS guy, and he was in communication with them, they could have got him guns, brought him across the border from Mexico, and got them to him somehow or other. Those guys have more guns. They have tanks and armored personnel carriers and rockets and mortars, and, you know, something like a semi-automatic rifle is nothing for them to get, or a handgun.
Well, I'm sure this guy could have also been able to obtain a gun here in the United States from another terrorist ISIS sympathizer like him, you know? I mean,
how about his wife? Straw purchase.
How about his wife? A straw purchase. Yeah, there you go. I mean, it doesn't matter that the guy bought his guns legally. That's an irrelevant point. He's going to get the guns anyway, even if he can buy them legally or not. It kind of frustrates me that we're spending a lot of time, not you and I, but I'm talking about the country spending a lot of time on that.
Right. I mean, let's face it. All these background checks and, you know, all these laws are for the law-abiding people. Criminals and terrorists don't abide by the law. Duh.
No. Yeah, duh. I mean, you know, look at France. Don't they pretty much ban guns in France?
Yeah. In fact, you know, the weapons in France were fully automatic weapons.
Those guys didn't buy – those guys that used the weapons in France, they didn't buy them legally in France, did they?
No, they were probably brought across the border and smuggled in.
And yeah, so exactly.
There's nothing – and, of course, you know, in the ultimate wisdom of the French bureaucracy, the police are disarmed. There was a cop just the other day. I think two police officers were stabbed. They were unarmed. They're not allowed to bring their duty weapon home with them.
So, you know – when we bring up the Paris attacks, that pretty much blows the whole argument out of the water that, well, we shouldn't allow these people to buy guns legally. It doesn't matter. They're going to get the guns that they want anyway to do whatever terrorist attack they want to do.
Exactly.
You know, having said that, let's get back to gun-free zones or victim disarmament zones again.
Because those gun-free zones really aren't gun-free when the terrorist brings their guns.
That's right. They're not gun-free when the terrorist
brings their guns. So-called gun-free zones, fantasy gun-free zones, as Alan Corin likes to call them. And that's another brilliant guy that if you haven't read his stuff, you need to read it.
Yeah. Alan Corwin, K-O-R-W-I-N.
Right. And it's gunlaws.com, I think, is what it is.
Gunlaws.com. So, John, yeah. do you think that this, quote, gun-free zone, unquote, problem is ever going to go away?
I think the only way it's going to go away is if the average person starts putting pressure on their elected representatives to get rid of them. I think that, fortunately, in our state, we may actually have some of our representatives that actually look at things the way we do, and we need to support them, and we need to, let our voices be heard. Around the country, there are some good people. In some states, it's going to be very difficult. But in most of the states, I think, all politics is local. So you have to start from at home, and then eventually maybe we can get some national stuff going through. But, just look at constitutional carry over the last few years, how that has exploded in the states. We used to only have like two or three states where it was constitutional carry. Now we've got a whole bunch more. And that's a grassroots effort at the state level. And until we get things going in the state level, the national level is going to be a bigger problem. Fortunately, the other side is going to have a hard time at the national level just based on the composition of the House and Senate right now. Although, the House is up for grabs this year.
No, the Senate is.
The House is up for grabs.
I thought the Senate was up for grabs.
Well, the House, every elected representative has to run every 2 years.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's a toss-up. Who knows what's going to happen. Now,
looking at
the history of things, the number of people get reelected is pretty significant. However, if you make the populace pissed off enough, they may kick the whole House of Representatives right out. Vote out the incumbents. The Senate, of course, is only a third of the Senate is up for election at any time, every 2 years. But the margins are small in the Senate. The margins in the House are pretty big.
Yeah.
But, that's why the House represents the people more, because they have to run every 2 years. They are more accountable, if you want to think of it that way. And in fact, if you look back at the way the Constitution was initially written, is that the Senate was not elected by the population. It was elected by the state state house.
I thought they were chosen by the governor.
No, I think they were actually elected by the state representatives. So the state and the Senate, or it could be each state chose the way it wanted to do it, but it was still they were representative of the state interest. Not a popularity contest.
Well, that is true. They were not elected by the public. Right. In the beginning, when our system was set up, right, senators were not elected by the public.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah. And so, in any event, they were elected. They came from the states, and they represented state interests. And that's part of the problem of why right now, we're having such issues, because the Senate doesn't really answer to the state. They answer to the Washington politicians. So
they are a part of the Washington.
Yeah, but I mean, they answer to special interest groups, and they're in the Beltway. They're not. They don't have to come back to the states really, except for when it's election time.
Yeah.
Whereas the state representatives or the federal representatives, every 2 years they gotta lay it on the line, and they have to account for their actions.
So that's why we need to be pressuring them.
Right. So. But anyway, on the state level, I mean, I think we all have to be active, and we all have to, we have to know, your representative needs to know who you are. Your state senator needs to know who you are. And how do you do that? You call their office and talk to their people.
Or talk to them if you can get them.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do. Trust me, I've been doing this for a while. It's very difficult to get an audience with the member. But if you get in good with their staff, they're going to put in a good word for you. And but if you don't say anything, your voice is never heard.
Well, and we also need to, you know, I say this almost every podcast, but we need to continually support the organizations that support us. We need to support Second Amendment Foundation. You need to be a member of their organization. You need to be a member of the NRA. You also need to contribute to the NRAILA,
right,
the Institute for Legislative Action, because that's the political lobbying. That's the political arm-twisting side of the NRA. And, you know, and your state and local.
Right. State organizations are important
state
as well.
Organizations as well. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have to turn up the heat. I want to urge listeners, and I want to see what your opinion is on this, John. I want to urge listeners to stop taking the bait. And when I say stop taking the bait, here's what I mean by that. The media is trying to bait you into thinking that this is a gun problem, or even to make you think that this is a problem of society and things like that. It's not. That's not the problem. The problem is very, very simple. It's evil, and it's radical Islamic terrorists. That's what the problem is. So don't take the bait that it's anything else.
Right. I mean, this is an individual decision of a person to go to a place and to kill people that they hate. And in the case of the Islamic, you know, jihadists, it's an LGBTQ club.
Whatever, yeah,
so,
the alphabet club.
You know, I mean, so there you go. You know, it's not only are you an American and you're an infidel, but you're also, you know, punishable by death in their eyes because of your sexual behavior. And, you know, but it's also puts the left wing people in a quandary, because now they have two favorite groups, one's killing the other. So now, what's going to happen there?
Yeah, what are they going to do about that?
And the, you know, the LGBT community is starting to open their eyes a little bit. You know, the
well,
Pink Pistols are an organization that is made out of people from the LGBT community. And they're pro Second Amendment people. You know, you've probably met, have you met Nikki?
No.
Yeah. And she's a, you know, a transgender person from San Francisco who's part of that organization. One of the physicians in our organization in DRGO is also part of the Pink Pistols up in Portland, Oregon. So, you know, we have, you know, good representation in Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership in the Second Amendment community. And all its, you know, variations. We need to make sure that we don't let our own prejudices stop people from being able to protect themselves.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you.
You know, and it's a human right. Being able to protect yourself, the Second Amendment is a human right long before it was ever in the Constitution.
That's exactly right.
And so we really need to reach out to members of all groups so that they can protect themselves. And, you know, you do training. You know that I take people out and teach them how to shoot.
Yes.
Everybody needs to, you know, take somebody by the hand. And especially if they're, you know, so this stuff is shaking them up, say, look, come on, I'll take you out and I'll teach you how to use a firearm. I'll show you what it's all about. I'll dispel all the myths that the media are going to, you know, try to spread every day. And, we're going to get you out there so that you have confidence and that you understand the safety so that you can operate a firearm safely, but to be able to protect yourself.
Yeah. Now, one last thing I want to ask you, John, because I want to kind of wrap this up in about 5 or 10 minutes. Has this, I think I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Has this event changed your thoughts about what you carry and how you carry it?
Not a whole lot. I've already gone to, you know, carrying a double stack pistol a while back. Unfortunately, in non-permissive environments, I'm not able to carry. So that becomes a real problem still. You know, we still have this gun-free zone issue. But when I am able to carry, I try to carry, you know, at least a double stack with some ammunition. In my everyday, you know, kind of doctor bag, I actually carry an IFAC. So I have a tourniquet and a blowout dressing and all that kind of stuff. Cause you never know, even in a hospital, this stuff can happen. They don't have, you know, tourniquets like you have for first aid. They have, you know, blood pressure cuff tourniquets that you'd have to roll out there, and then you have to plug in. And, you know, by the time they get that thing in the area, that person's already bled out. So we all have to think about not only protecting ourselves, but also be able to deal with the aftermath. And I think that having some kind of an individual first aid kit, and knowing how to use a tourniquet and a pressure dressing and all this kind of stuff is important. So besides learning how to use firearms, we also need to learn how to do basic first aid and, you know, how to stop the bleeding. It doesn't do any good if someone's got an airway and they're breathing if their blood is all in a puddle on the floor and they got no blood volume. So you got to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, you just brought up an excellent point. Absolutely. People need to take those types of classes, right, and learn what they're doing.
Right. And they're out there. There's a lot of good people out there that are teaching the classes. Caleb Causey up in Dallas has got a school where he teaches a lot of people about that kind of stuff. He's a former military medic. There's a lot of former military medics out there teaching people how to do. I think Ben's got that class in August up in Arkansas.
Yeah, Centerton, Arkansas. Yeah. He's going up and he's teaching with Ken Kowalski. Right. I guess Ken Kowalski is going to teach. Yeah, he was a medic. He's going to teach the medical part, and Ben's going to teach one day beyond concealed carry.
Right. And so, you know, a class like that is ideal. You're hitting both ends of the nail. You know, you're hitting the head and the toe, so you can protect yourself. And, you know, because the other thing is, even if you don't get shot, what about your family member who's standing next to you when this all starts? What if they got hit? Your gun's not going to help you save them.
Nope.
You need to learn how to stop the bleeding until, you know, the EMTs get there and they can transport. And if we get into a situation where we have a mass shooting like in Orlando, there were some people that actually had their lives saved outside that thing by people who had first aid skills and were able to stop bleeding, and because the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. You know, you get 50 casualties in a major hospital, that emergency room is going to be a zoo, and they're not going to be able to take individual care. You know, they're going to be triaging. You know, this is what triage is all about. You know, the people that they can stop the bleeding, you know, get them stabilized, are the ones they're going to treat first. If you got a headshot, sorry, you go in the back of the line. We're going to try to save all the people that we can save that are critical, that we can save them. And then we'll deal with the ones that are not quite as badly injured. And then we'll deal with the ones that we put off to the back of the line. Because there's so many resources needed to save that person that you can save 10 other people. You know, you sacrifice that one life for the other 10 that you can save. That's what triage is all about.
Exactly.
And so, you know, when we get into the, and here we go, here's another thought. What if that happens in the emergency room, that mass shooting? Now what do you do?
Oh, okay. I didn't think about
this
that.
This is my concern. I just got done writing an article for USCCA magazine that talks about the history of terrorism against hospitals worldwide. And it's going to come out in the July issue, and it's worthwhile to read. I think it's going to ask a lot of questions. Also, I gave a kind of a brief talk about that at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Phoenix last year. So you can find that on YouTube, and you can hear a little bit about it. But there is a history of terrorism against hospitals. Hospitals are soft targets, and unfortunately, hospital administrations are not willing to put the effort and the resources into securing hospitals. You know, the plastic sign is good enough. At least that's what the attorneys tell them.
Yeah, right. Okay. Sure it is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have one armed guard. That's enough. Yeah, one armed guard at that nightclub was enough, too.
Or was it? Yeah. And you know what? Maybe the nightclubs, maybe that nightclub in Orlando should have put up the plastic signs that we have here in Texas. Maybe that would have worked.
Yeah, maybe not.
Doesn't this kind of frustrate you when you think about the idiocy of some of the things that people do? And you know, let's face it, governments are people. These are people. And just because they hold an elected position in a position of so-called power, they're people.
Yep.
And, you know, some of the lunacy that they come up with, like a plastic sign that says 30-06 is going to stop a bad guy from coming in there. Give me a break.
Yeah, no, it really should be a skull and crossbones that says enter at your own risk, because that's really what it says. You, at any one point in time when you walk into a gun-free zone, you're a potential target, and there's nothing that you can do other than rush the nut. You know, that's all you're left with.
Rush the nut, that's right.
You know, that's all you're left with is, you know, of course, the government says run, hide, fight. So, again, here we go. You know, it's not defend yourself, it's run away. It's kind of like Monty Python, run away, run away.
Well, see, I'm going to be one of those guys rushing the nut. That's me. And, you know, the problem is like you mentioned earlier in this interview, we have too many sheep in this country. I'm not going to be one of those sheep. If I lose my life rushing the nut to try to save some other people, then so be it. I know where I'm going when my life is over anyway. I'm going to be rejoicing with my Lord in heaven. So, you know what? Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. You know, amen to that. And so I'm going to be rushing the nut. And people, come on. You need to understand, you have to have a rush the nut mentality if this happens in a building that you're in. Because, you know, look at all the sheep we have. That's another reason why these things are happening. That guy knew it was an extremely soft target.
Right. And we have to start hardening up our targets. I was at the NRA meeting a few weeks ago. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman talked about the next targets, and he says they're going to be middle schools and school buses.
Oh, man.
Okay? And it makes perfect sense. They're not going to want to attack the high schools because high school kids are big and strong and are liable to fight back. Elementary schools, the kids are small and unable to understand what's going on to some degree and to be able to follow instructions. But those middle school kids are old enough to understand consequences, cause, and effect. But they're not physically big enough to be a physical threat to the terrorists. And school buses, there are so many school buses out there. You know, look what Israel had to put up with. Okay, yeah. They had to arm people on school buses because their school buses were being attacked and their schools were being attacked. And these guys aren't just like hiding a pistol or something. They're carrying long guns. Okay, and they've been doing this for a while. And guess what? They haven't had any attacks against their schools.
Yeah, I bet the school bus violence pretty much disappeared,
so,
didn't it?
So you need to talk to your – in addition to your hospitals, you need to talk to your school boards and say, what are we doing to protect our schools? You know, there's the FASTER program up in Ohio. Those guys have done a tremendous amount to prepare a lot of school districts in Ohio, and they're training other people. I think Rob Morse is going up there this week to sit in on a FASTER class.
Good.
So we get to hear from him one of these days about his impression of it.
He's got the gun blog variety cast, right?
No. He's the Polite Society.
Polite Society, yeah. But Rob's also started his own. Hasn't
no, he has. Yeah, well, he has the. It's about.
Help me come up with the name.
I'm trying to think. It's.
John's going to be upset. Rob's going to be
sorry,
upset.
Rob. We're
sorry,
both
Rob.
Did, but,
I'm going to find
we're
it.
Not
I'm
the
going
only
to find it and put it in the show notes.
Here. Let me pull up my podcast, and it's right there because he actually put one out today. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. Self-defense gun stories.
Self-defense gun stories.
And the premise behind that is he gets an instructor, and in fact, Ben has been on that. Ben Branham has been on that as the instructor, and they have three different self-defense stories, and they analyze what happens and the good and the bad and the ugly, and so that people can learn from other people's experiences and not make them themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Here it is. I'm looking at it right now,
yeah.
And Rob's on episode number 17 right now.
Yeah.
And
but Ben has been one of the instructors. So the Streets have been there. Jenna Meek. There's been a lot of Tony Simon. He's had a lot of really good people on there as instructors, and it's actually worthwhile listening to.
Episode 12 with Ben Branham. Yeah, yeah. Go back. So go listen to that kind of stuff, self-defense gun stories, and Rob's also on the Polite Society podcast with Paul Lathrop and the whole crew there.
Yep. So anyway, bottom line is, you know, we have to look at these gun-free zones as targets. And you have to start thinking like a, you know, deranged killer or a terrorist. And you have to figure out how it's going to happen. Where can you go to escape? You know, if something goes down, what are your exit points? How do you get out of there? If not, where can you barricade yourself and then be prepared to attack when the person comes through the door? What kind of improvised weapons can you have? Fire extinguishers are wonderful battering rams. You hit somebody in the head with a fire extinguisher, and you're going to light them up.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, people got to stop running and hiding. They've got to start learning how to improvise.
Pens,
absolutely.
Things could use just throwing heavy things at them. You know, these are the things that we're left with. I mean, most of us would much prefer to have, a full-sized semi-auto pistol to fight these guys off with, but if you're put in a place that you cannot avoid being in a gun-free zone because of the laws and the workplaces that you have to be in, then you have to plan other ways to be able to defend yourself. We got to rush the nut. We got to take the fight to them. We have to, as we like to say, we have to mess with their OODA loop, right?
Yeah.
They're not expecting the victims to fight back. They're not expecting an ambush from a place that they can't see. And these are all the things that we need to start thinking about and start preparing for. Because who knows when terror is going to come to your city? You know, Orlando up until yesterday was the happy place, you know, or, you know, last week, you know, where only alligators are dangerous, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
But now, you know, and any place, any city, any town, these guys have proven that even in a state where, you know, it's a gun-friendly state, all you have to do is find a gun-free zone, and you've got a nice crop of victims just waiting to get slaughtered. And can't let ourselves be in that crowd, okay? We have to be prepared, and we have to be ready to fight. And if you can't carry a gun, carry a knife. Carry some kind of a sap or something, but you got to carry something. When I'm in a hospital, I have my my Emerson sheepdog knife with me everywhere, all the time. It's hanging on my belt right now, and you can't let yourself be totally disarmed.
No, you can't. John, who's the guy that came up with Rush the Nut? Who came up with
it? It was Anthony Calandro.
Yeah, that's right.
At Gun for Hire Radio in New Jersey. It's because I'm a Jersey boy.
Yeah.
So that's.
Yeah, you have to have something on you. You know, I keep folding knives and flashlights and everything with me all the time.
Right, a flashlight's a great tool.
Absolutely.
Not only can you, if you're in an inside place, if you hit, you know, 200 lumens in the guy's eyes, you're going to blind him. And then, of course, you know, in the stuff that you taught us, you hit him with the light and then you move and then attack, you know, that way he doesn't know where you're at. And by the time he gets his vision back, you've already put him to the ground.
Ben and I taught you that in the night class.
That's right. You know, and so, you know, and plus the bezel on those things is a great striking tool. You can take somebody's skin right off with those things. Believe me, it's easy to do. You know,
yep.
I'm an expert in getting through people's skin.
Yeah, you would know about that.
That's right.
You?
You bet. It doesn't take much to. I mean, just some of the traumatic wounds that I see in my ordinary practice. You know, people get their legs sliced open on a piece of metal flashing, or the edge of a sidewalk, or anything, and it just rips the skin and lays it wide open. And you know, so a bezel of a flashlight is a wonderful tool, and you know, you may not knock him unconscious, and you may, if you hit him over the eyes, you get blood in his eyes. He's not going to be able to see as well. You know, you degrade his ability to attack you or other people. is a distraction. Again, you're messing with his OODA loop. Every minute that you're distracting this guy, he's not killing other people, and help is coming.
And that's the key. That's the key of not being a sheep is, you know, distract this guy, upset his OODA loop, and, you know, get inside these people's heads when they do this stuff. You know, and that's what, and again, even if there's one person with a gun that starts to return fire, that sure messes up his OODA loop quite a bit, doesn't it?
Right. No, absolutely. That's the ultimate messing with his OODA loop. When you put a bullet between his eyes, that pretty much stops the OODA loop.
But like you said earlier, you know, 100 people, each weighs an average of 150 pounds, 15,000 pounds of humanity coming at him. I'd say that's probably going to upset him a little bit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just have to make sure that we think about this stuff before it happens. None of us are going to do this automatically. We have to think about what are we going to do if this happens? How are we going to attack this guy? You know, it's not something that, you know, you're going to do naturally. The natural inclination is to flee. The unnatural inclination is to attack. And the sheepdogs, we're the ones that are going to have to get on the attack. The sheep are going to be running the other direction. We're the ones that are going to be running towards the sounds of the gunfire and to make this thing stop. So.
Absolutely. All right, John, I think this is a good stopping point. We could keep on going, but people don't have that long to listen. Maybe we'll do a part two.
Anytime.
I hope that Anthony doesn't mind if I call this episode Rush the Nut.
No, I think he would be quite flattered. I can send him an email just to let him know if you want.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
I'd appreciate that.
I'll do that for him.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right.
And thanks for coming on the Handgun World podcast.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
Well, there you go. Many thanks, Dr. John Dean. He was one of the first people I thought of when this shooting happened. You know, well, actually, the first people I thought of were the poor victims and their families. And my hearts and prayers still go out to the victims. But then I thought, you know what? I've got to get John on here to talk about this because he just absolutely hates gun-free zones. And same here. So that's why I wanted to bring him on for this interview. Check out his website, Doctors Responsible for Gun Ownership, drgo.us. Hey, I want to finish up by mentioning, you know, September 17th, I'm teaching Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, Worst Case Scenarios. Now, I named this class before this terrorist attack happened, but I think between now and September, I'm going to have some really good information to share with you in this class. And I've already got some good thoughts and techniques to teach about a worst case scenario. What if you find yourself in a situation like the people at the nightclub in Orlando? Get signed up. It'll be well worth one day of your time. September 17th on Saturday, I will be your instructor. San Antonio, Texas. Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, Worst Case Scenarios. You do have to have some prior training. It doesn't have to be training that I've taught or that Ben's taught, but you got to have some prior training and be able to show me that before you get signed up or at least before you attend the class. Well, that's it, folks. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I want to remind you, shoot straight, shoot safe, read your Bible every day, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.